1, 2, 3.
You're listening to Sports Talk Chicago with your host, John Zagluhl.
John, I am fantastic. Thank you for having me. You got an awesome voice, man, and that was a terrific intro. You're like a pro's pro.
You know, that was the first time somebody ever said that, John. No, you're the first person to ever say anything like that. That's very interesting.
You got it, John. Anything for a fellow Chicago guy.
Well, what a great question.
That's a great question. Nobody's actually asked me that.
I like it. What a great question. I never heard that before.
Chase Utley is what? You're saying he's not a Hall of Fame candidate?
You know, it's funny. You may be the only person that I've heard make that connection.
Thank you, John, for having me. I'm doing great. By the way, you have an outstanding voice. Not sure about your face because I haven't met you, but your voice is great.
You're doing a much better job than I ever did. You've had some heavy hitters guests on too, man, so keep up the good work. But it's good to be with you, and I'm ready to talk sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zagluhl. Great to have you here. On the Tuesday edition of the program, what will the Bears do in the draft? We have a mock draft coming up in just a moment. Plus, a brand new interview today with David Schuster, the host of the Schuster Grobstein Express and the Sharpshooters podcast. We talk with him about some Bulls and Bears news, his illustrious career in sports media, and so much more. You don't want to miss this interview. It comes up near the midway point of this show. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluhl. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Today's show is brought to you by State Farm agent Brian McDevitt. Here's the deal. When you combine State Farm home and auto insurance, save an average of $889. State Farm agent Brian McDevitt, ready to help you combine home and auto, save in Chicago and the surrounding suburbs. Call Brian today at 630-796-2662. That's 630-796-2662. Or visit his website, ryanismyagent.com. That's ryanismyagent.com. And make sure to mention Sports Talk Chicago. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Why do I believe the Bears will screw this up? Why? You know, last week, I was going to do a mock draft. Had it all planned out. A great draft that would address every need they had. First round at 20, Tevin Jenkins, an offensive tackle. Second round, Kellen Mond, quarterback. They trade up in the second round and take Nico Collins, the wide receiver from Michigan. And then in the third round, Deontay Brown, the gun from Alabama. It would have addressed every need. Would have been perfect. Then we saw the rumor mill stir things up over the weekend. The Bears are in talks to move up. They want Justin Fields. Justin Fields is their guy. So I've revised the mock draft. I'll tell you what I have, but I want to say this first. Drafting Justin Fields is a big mistake. And I'm not talking about his medical problems. I'm talking about history. Track record. Think about this for a second. Ryan Pace is drafting another quarterback. That should already be a red flag. Two, Ohio State has never produced a good quarterback. Dwayne Haskins, Troy Smith, JT Barrett, Cardale Jones, Terrell Pryor, who turned into a wide receiver, Braxton Miller, the same. Do you really want to do that again? Everybody said Dwayne Haskins is different. 50 touchdowns, 8 picks, great player. Didn't work. Everybody said Justin Fields is different. Look, Ohio State cannot develop quarterbacks, just like Alabama. Now, if it came down to Mac Jones or Justin Fields, I'd take Fields. At least Fields is mobile. Mac Jones is a pocket passer, and Alabama's 10 times worse when it comes to development. That's just a fact. But I do not believe in this strategy. Yes, I get it. 22 touchdowns, 6 picks. doing great things for Ohio State, I know. But I am of the thought that the Bears don't need a quarterback. I mean, they do, but they don't now. They've invested money in Andy Dalton and Nick Foles. Let it be. There doesn't need to be another quarterback in the mix. And I'm just utterly shocked that no one seems to have learned the lessons of Ohio State quarterbacks. Anyone remember this? Troy Smith? Troy Smith, at one point, competed with Colin Kaepernick and Alex Smith for the starting job in San Francisco. That's how bad it was. And he didn't win. He was done. JT Barrett, great college player, not even worth anything in the NFL. Cardale Jones. Braxton Miller, Terrell Pryor, Dwayne Haskins. Why would you do that? Why would you take an Ohio State quarterback? And on top of it, to boot, they're going to trade up and do it. They shouldn't. I really advise against it, but I think they will. So, I gave you the warning. I gave you the preface. Warning label is right out there, but the Bears will do what they want. Here is my mock draft, revised because of all this news and all these rumors about trading. The Bears will trade up and take Justin Fields at 8. But in order to do that, they will give up number 20, they'll give up a second-round pick, and next year's first-round pick. Then in the third round, they will take Deonte Brown. So I'm anticipating only 2 picks for the Bears in the first 3 rounds of this draft. Before all this news, I was expecting 4 in 3. I thought they would trade up into the second round once more and take Nico Collins, a wide receiver. But if we're going to weigh out needs for this team, the offensive line desperately needs help. At least you have Allen Robinson and you have Darnell Mooney. That's good enough for now. I'm not saying they're superstars. I'm not saying the wide receiving core is okay. But at the end of the day, if you have no protection for your quarterback, how is he going to throw to anyone? The protection was just horrible last year. Very bad. Now you brought in a new quarterback. You might draft another. You need an offensive line. So I do believe they will take a lineman. In this case, Deonte Brown out of Alabama. Lots of good things for him. At 6'3", 350 pounds, Brown's extra-wide frame will fit in perfectly in Nagy's wide-zone running scheme. He'll slot in at right guard between Sam Mustafa and Rashad Coward. Great. I'm all for that. I really am. That's going to be an A-plus pick for the Bears. No question. But to trade up for an Ohio State quarterback, that's a problem. That's a red flag. Shouldn't be doing that. Fields did all right last year, too many picks. Regressed slightly despite playing in less games. Why does anyone think he'll be a star in the NFL? I just don't see it. And you could say, oh, it's lazy to think about past quarterbacks and put it all on Fields, say Ohio State's a bad quarterback school. I'm going to say it. Because it's true. I have no problem pointing out that Troy Smith, Cardale Jones, JT Barrett, Braxton Miller, Terrell Pryor, and Dwayne Haskins didn't pan out in the NFL. That is fair to say. And now what? The Bears are going to move up, give away more draft capital to take Justin Fields. Oh, and by the way, that's Ryan Pace's guy, so good luck. To me, that is just the worst possible scenario for this team. You've already invested money in the quarterback position. We said that last week. You're paying Andy Dalton. You're paying Nick Foles. You don't need another quarterback added to the mix. On top of it, your offensive line is decaying. And you have, realistically, 2 wide receivers. In what universe is it beneficial to move up, trade more draft capital, and take a quarterback from Ohio State? That's what I thought. When you think about it like that, it doesn't sound too good. Everyone's infatuated because they want the next big thing. Ooh, Justin Fields, cool. You really think he's going to work? I'm serious. You really think that he'll break the mold? He'll break the mold of Ohio State quarterbacks who've been busts in the NFL. No, he won't. I don't like this one bit. Ryan Pace, can't draft. Gonna move up, give up more, invest more in the quarterback position. For what? And see, I've seen people say, John, you're crazy. It's a quarterback you have to invest, but he already has. He's already put money into it. Andy Dalton, Nick Foles. Isn't this a bit overboard? Let's think about this for a second. Paying Mike Lennon, trading up for Mitch Trubisky, paying Nick Foles, paying Andy Dalton. Now trading up again to get Justin Fields? That's a lot of capital. You've invested in one position that still hasn't panned out. Meanwhile, the rest of the team is slowly but surely decaying. And nothing's been done to address or fix it. To me, that's scary. And I really advise against the Bears taking Justin Fields. If they do, they'll give up pick number 20, a second round pick, next year's first pick. That's my prediction. And then Deontay Brown in round 3. That's it. So that's how that sounds. Compare that to the mock draft I was going to talk about last week. Okay? Tevin Jenkins, offensive tackle. Kellen Mond, quarterback. Nico Collins, wide receiver, Michigan. And Deontay Brown, guard, Alabama. Which draft sounds better? Which one addresses more needs? Which one tells everybody we're not going to give up more and more capital? To me, the answer is quite simple. Very simple. But the Bears are going to do what they want. They're in a tough position. I've said it all year. I do feel a little bad for Ryan Pace. Everything he seemed to do hasn't worked. I know he's under a time crunch. He needs to make a splash. But he's doing that at the expense of the future. What will the Bears look like in 2 or 3 years? They're going to be tapped out. I can already see it, a cap nightmare. No draft picks. Ryan Pace will be fired. Matt Nagy. They will literally be in the worst possible position as an NFL team. It's easily avoidable, but it won't happen. So to all of you who are considering Justin Fields, who want him, who think he's great, I'm here to tell you, hold back that praise a bit. Keep it in check. Because you're not realizing the cost, and you're not realizing the track record and the pedigree that comes with Ohio State quarterbacks. Some people just think, oh, Dwayne Haskins, who else? It's been a pattern for decades. Decades. They just can't get the quarterback position right in the NFL. They do great in college. But come to the pros? No, they don't. They can't perform. Everyone wants a cool new thing. But I'm here to tell you, it isn't worth it. The Bears need to spread the wealth on their team. They can't be putting in more and more to one position and let everything else burn down. It's happening, though. And unfortunately for this team, there's nothing we can do about it. More to come here on Sports Talk Chicago. My interview with David Schuster comes up next, so stay tuned. Hey, do you want to make some money this weekend? What if I told you I could offer you $250 free to bet on any game you want? Here's what you have to do. Go to sportstalkchicago.com/cash. sportstalkchicago.com/cash. Must be 21 plus. Must be an Illinois resident. You can bet $253 on any game you want for this upcoming weekend. Cubs and White Sox are going strong. The Bulls are losing, but they're still playing. And the Blackhawks continue their fight for a playoff spot. This is, without question, the best time to put down some money and win a whole lot more back. At sportstalkchicago.com/cash. sportstalkchicago.com/cash. You have a gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Talk Chicago. Here with John Zagluel, and we are back and ready for today's special guest. He's a longtime Chicago sports reporter, host of the Grobstein Schuster Express, and the host of the Sharpshooters podcast. Please welcome David Schuster to the program. David, it's great to have you on. How are you?
John, I'm doing great, and I appreciate you having me.
So, David, what's wrong with the Bulls right now?
Well, the simple answer is they're just not good enough, but I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a little surprised that ever since they've made the trades, they haven't played better. Now, obviously, Zach LaVine has not been there for the last four or five games, and I don't know when he's going to be able to return from his safety and health protocols, obviously something to do with COVID. But, you know, ever since they made the trade, I thought the roster overall improved. They really didn't give up anything player-wise. Obviously, the two first-round future draft picks, that could come back to haunt them. That remains to be seen. But the roster overall, I thought, was better. I knew that initially they were going on that West Coast swing, and they probably wouldn't win many, if any, games on that, only because they had no practice time. And, you know, to have new players, you got to at least have some practice time, if not some games under your belt, before you're able to get Vucevic in there and Tice and some of the other guys that they acquired. But, you know, now that they have their legs underneath them and they've had some practice time, I'm surprised that they've lost some of the games that they have. So, you know, I know you've had a running battle with a mutual friend of ours that they should tank out. And I tend to agree with you. I agree with you. Of course, I disagree with George on a lot of things. So that goes without saying. But and I can kid and say that. But, you know, they're not going to make the playoffs this year. They're now two games behind Washington, and Washington's won. Is on a long winning streak. And Russell Westbrook, believe it or not, has put himself into the MVP equation here of how he's played for like the last 2.5 months. So they're not going to catch Washington. Washington will be above them. Toronto is also not going to make it. And then, you know, then it's a matter of, you know, if they're able to tank well or at least lose enough games and once again hope to get lucky in the lottery, and they have to have, you know, a top four pick because that first-round draft pick is top four protected, that would be the best of all worlds at this point. Because even if by chance they were able to overtake Washington, they're not going to get into a playoff series. So it really makes no sense to me.
Did NK jump the gun a bit? Were the Bulls not ready to make these moves and become, quote-unquote, a contender?
Well, I don't think that the trades were made for, you know, being a contender this year. I mean, obviously, Vucevic, I mean, anytime you can get an all-star center, you got to do it. I mean, you know, listen, I'm pretty old fashioned. You know, it's still a big man's game, and you have to have somebody who can play center. Wendell Carter Jr., God bless him. He did the best he could. He'll do the best he can going forward in his NBA career. He might play another 5 to 8 years, but he's undersized. They did not have a center of consequence. Vucevic, and I've been watching him for a long time, is an all-star center, at least on the offensive end of the court. Defensively, I've been a little bit disappointed. There's been a lot of guys who have, especially guards, who have just blown by him. So I'm a little surprised by that. But again, anytime you're able to get an all-star center overall who can, you know, start working with your fellow all-star in Zach LaVine, and now you all of a sudden you have that screen and roll, pick and roll offense that is almost instant with those two guys, you got to take a chance. And it was a chance that I thought was worth taking. But like I said, I'm a little surprised with all the additions that they've added that they have not played better overall.
David Schuster here on Sports Talk Chicago. David, who on the roster right now, besides LaVine and Vucevic, would you keep moving forward?
Well, Patrick Williams, obviously, because he was a high draft pick, although I'm going to be honest, I've been fairly disappointed with him now for like the last 6 weeks to, you know, to 2 months. You know, early in the season, he showed you what he could do. He's still the second youngest player in the NBA, and you have to take that into account. You know, he's got those big hands, something that Jerry Krause used to always love to talk about. And, you know, he's strong. He's got a man's body already. He's only not, I think he's still 19, or he might have already turned 20. So, I mean, obviously his best days are still ahead of him. He's got a lot to work on, obviously, and he has to stop deferring to older players. I know that's part of his DNA. He did that even in his 1 year at Florida State. He came off the bench, and he was a freshman, obviously, last year at Florida State, and he deferred to the older players. And again, that's just part of his makeup. But you know what? Once you get to the NBA, the hell with ages. I mean, if you're good enough, listen, LeBron James came into the NBA at 18 years old, and he was dominating right off the bat. And, you know, I'm not saying that Patrick Williams is ready to dominate anything, but he's got the talent to be a consistent NBA player. And I'm just disappointed that he defers as much as he does to his fellow veteran players, if you will. So he's obviously another one. After that, boy, you're going to keep Kobe White, but he's not a point guard, and he's certainly not a starting point guard. Kobe White will be in the NBA for a long time as a sixth man kind of guy. He's always been a scorer. He was, you know, the leading high school scorer in North Carolina history, even more than Michael Jordan. So, I mean, the guy's got, you know, scoring ability, obviously, but he's not a point guard. And again, once again, I'm old fashioned. I think you have to have somebody who is able to get everybody set up in the offense. And that's not what Kobe White is. So, you know, he can be a Jamal Crawford. He can be a Lou Williams kind of player. He can be a Vinnie Johnson going even much further back, but he's not a starting point guard. Those are really, you know, the building blocks of this team. Some of the other guys, maybe, maybe not. I mean, ultimately you got to fill out a roster, but those are the four players that I think you build around.
So no Lauri Markkanen. How shocking is that considering how much hype was around him when the Bulls drafted him?
Well, he's been a disappointment. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. And right now, he's going to cost you a lot of money, if you're able to retain him. Now, obviously, he gambled on himself. And so far, it hasn't panned out because he's not even starting anymore. And now that he's coming off the bench, he's not, you know, being very aggressive either, much like Patrick Williams. I think he's got the talent, but I just don't know about his motor or his heart overall. And since he's going to cost a lot of money, if you want to go out and spend the money, maybe, and I don't know how the cap situation is going to pan out. I'm not a capologist and I don't play one anywhere, but you know, if you're going to try and get Lonzo Ball, which I would try and do, I mean, he is a true point guard. I know there's some knocks against him for his shooting, but it got a lot better this season. And I think if you put him on a team with Vucevic and with LaVine and maybe Patrick Williams and some other pieces that you'll have to add ultimately down the road, you know, he's young and he can build with that squad. So the money that you would save on renouncing the rights to Markkanen, you can use for a guy like Lonzo Ball. So yeah, Markkanen, unfortunately, is a high draft pick that has not panned out the way anybody hoped, and I'm not going to keep him on my roster.
If the Bulls execute and get Lonzo Ball and move forward with this plan, when will they be good, do you think?
Well, it's not going to happen overnight. Nothing really does in the NBA unless you really get a super, superstar. You know, Vucevic has got two more years left on his contract. LaVine's got 2 years. You know, they're talking about maybe extending at least LaVine. You would hope, if not, you know, knocking on the – well, you got to make the playoffs next year if you're making these kind of moves. You just have to. And let's face it, the Eastern Conference is not good. Take a look at the landscape. It's really not good. So whatever moves that they make, certainly what they made at the trading deadline and what they're hoping to make in the offseason, and maybe they get lucky with a high draft pick, you know, if it's top four protected – they have to make the playoffs next year, and maybe within 2 years they can be a contender in the East. You got to take a look at the other teams in the Eastern Conference. I mean, Brooklyn obviously has got, you know, the talent. Is Kevin Durant going to be around a long time? I mean, he seems to be breaking down left and right. Harden now has, you know, missed a major stretch of this season now with the injuries that he had, although he was playing unbelievable basketball once he came over to Brooklyn. And Kyrie Irving is just an absolute flake, you know, and sometimes a lot worse than being a flake. I mean, he might even be a cancer on top of being a flake. So, I mean, you know, they're talented. Milwaukee's got the Greek freak, but, you know, they underachieve. Philadelphia's got Joel Embiid. And sorry, Joel, you know, you were the leading candidate at one time for the MVP, but I think you've lost your luster over the last couple of weeks. You know, so I don't know, you know, really, if you take a look at the landscape in the East, Boston has just been a major disappointment. Toronto has dropped like a rock in water. Forget Detroit. They're god awful. You know, Orlando stinks on top of it. So, yeah, the Bulls. And, you know, kudos to the Knicks and kudos to Tom Thibodeau, who's probably going to be the coach of the year. But in the long run, they're not going to be a title contender because he'll burn them all out like he always does. So, yeah, the Bulls have a chance to move up in a very weak conference. Within 2 years, they have to be considered a contender if they make the right moves going forward.
David Schuster here on Sports Talk Chicago. David, what was your reaction to the Andy Dalton signing?
I laughed, to be honest with you. It's. I mean, I hate to laugh at the Bears, but you know, they give me the chuckles. I don't know how else to put it. Take a look at the money. I mean, Ryan Pace, when it's all said and done, you know what one of his legacies is going to be as the general manager of the Bears is that he pissed away so much of the organization's money on quarterbacks who are not going to get anything done. Mike Glennon got $18.75 million for the four games that he played. That comes out to about $4.75 million. He was 2-2, and even the two games, he wasn't responsible for the wins. So, I mean, think about that. $18.75 million for four games that that guy played. Mitch Trubisky never should have been drafted as high as he was. And what a joke it was moving up even one spot, you know, to even get him at number two, much less number three. That set the organization back years. And now they're giving Andy Dalton $10 million when Dink Dallas only paid him $1.5 million last year. So, I mean, like I said, one of his legacies on top of everything else is going to be that he pissed away money for bad quarterbacks.
Do you expect anything out of Dalton?
I mean, once upon a time, he was a decent quarterback. Obviously, he got him to the playoffs. But you know what? If you took a look at how he performed in those playoff games, I mean, he was a clown. I mean, I hate to use that word, but he was god-awful. He had, what was it? He had six interceptions and two or three fumbles that he lost, and he had one touchdown pass in his five playoff games that he, you know, they lost all of them. Now, he was a Pro Bowl quarterback, but he also had one of the best receivers in football, you know, to throw to during his his best time in Cincinnati. Do I expect him to do much? No, I really don't. But first of all, let's see what they surround him with. The offensive line has got to get better, as in much. The running back's got to stay healthy, and they have to upgrade overall the wide receiver position. So I don't expect much overall from him. He's basically a stopgap. That's why it's a one-year contract.
Are the Bears officially done at quarterback, do you think? What could they do in the draft?
Well, they're not going to trade up in the first round. They really have no resources to trade up. I mean, you know, they gave away so many draft picks, certainly for Khalil Mack. And who knows if that trade is going to pan out the way overall that they had wanted it to. So far, in my estimation, it has not. You know, I don't think they're going to be able to trade up in the first round. There's five very good quarterbacks, supposedly, but they're going to go within the top 10 picks. So I don't see that happening. There's a second or even third tier of quarterbacks that can be made available in the second and third rounds. So I anticipate that they will. But then, you know what? Why were they protecting Tyler Bray all those weeks this past season? I mean, Tyler Bray, the great Tyler Bray. I mean, when are we going to see him? The answer, never. And yet they protected him. God knows why. So he's not the answer. I don't know who is, to be honest with you, John. I mean, I hate to keep making fun of the Bears, but they make fun of themselves.
How likely is a Ryan Pace mistake?
How likely is it?
Yes.
At least 50-50. I mean, that's sort of a cop-out answer, I do admit. I mean, because everything is 50-50. But, I mean, take a look. He's made some major mistakes. He's made some major mistakes in drafting. He's made some major mistakes in letting guys go, maybe even, you know, trying to manage the cap overall. I mean, could they have figured out long in advance of keeping an all-pro player like Kyle Fuller as opposed to allowing him to go, you know, up north and probably intercept a few of Andy Dalton passes when the Bears play the Packers? I mean, that would be kismet, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. Do you think he should have been fired after the season?
You know, I always hate saying anybody should lose their job, but let me put it this way. If they don't make the playoffs this year, which I don't think they will, it's time to jettison him and maybe even his coach too. I don't really know, you know, if the coach is sort of being hand-checked by some of the decisions that the general manager has made in this instance. I'm not really sure about that. But, yeah, if the Bears don't make the playoffs this upcoming season, yeah, I think it's time to move on.
More to come with David Schuster in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is Sports Talk Chicago. David Schuster, still here on Sports Talk Chicago. And David, I wanted to also talk about your career for a moment. Tell me about the journey you've gone through in sports media.
Oh, what did Phil Jackson once say when he was talking about the Grateful Dead? It's been a very strange odyssey or something along those lines, which it has. I always kid around and say that I came out of my mother's womb loving sports, which I have, and I, you know, over all these years, and I did. Played baseball as long as I could, a little bit into high school. Oh, wasn't good enough. I just wasn't, which is, listen, I'm thankful. I've known some players from when I was in college who kicked around in the minors after that for years. And so it's, if nothing else, it was good to know that I was nowhere near good enough. So I got into broadcasting because I wanted to stay in sports. I went to Southern Illinois. It was a great education. I don't really remember too much of my SIU days, much like everybody else. It's sort of like a puff of smoke or a lot of haze, if you will. Anyway, I graduated. I had a lot of job offers to little towns around the Midwest and down south. And this guy from Chicago wasn't going to either of those two places. So I came up to Chicago, got sort of lucky. I had an interview at what was now, and I don't know if you or your listeners will be familiar with what's called Sports Phone back in the day. And it was, you know, recorded sports information and scores on a 976 or 900 number, which was big back in the day. We're talking, you know, late 70s, early 80s, up until the mid to late 80s. It was telecommunications, and people were calling left and right to get their scores. And this is long before the 10-minute scroll on TV and long before pagers and long before people had all these electronic devices to get their scores. So most of the people who called were gamblers because they wanted to know the scores of the games. So we were really big in the gambling community. But a lot of guys from Sports Phone, including myself, graduated. And I worked with so many people. George Hoffman, Fred Huebner, Ron Gleason, so on and so forth. Numerous people, Les Grobstein, who went on to radio careers because Sports Phone was just sort of a bridge or a stepping stone into the broadcast industry. And, you know, we were lucky that we were able to cover sports games, even working at Sports Phone. And my big break, honestly, was I covered the Disco Demolition Twilight doubleheader. It was just an innocuous doubleheader on a Friday late afternoon starting at 4 o'clock. It was the White Sox and the Tigers, 1979, I think it was. And Steve Dahl, who was a big disc jockey at the time, was, you know, anti-disco. And he had a promotion that the White Sox were a part of to blow up disco records in between games of the Twilight doubleheader. Well, little did anybody know, much less the White Sox, that Dahl had such a backing of people that it ended up being over 50,000 people came to that doubleheader, and normally they would average about 5,000-8,000 people. So the promotion worked really well from one standpoint. Unfortunately, it worked way too well. And, you know, the people who came, I'm sure they were drunk, they were high, yada, yada, yada. And there were a lot of, you know, loons in the bunch. And when he blew up the records in between games, all of a sudden the fans rushed the field. And there were fires on the field. They tore the place to pieces. I remember there was a fire in the upper deck in right field. There was a fire in the left field upper deck. There was like a bonfire in center field. They burned, you know, the grass all over the place. And it was a riot. And the cops were called in. And people were jumping over the wall to get into the ballpark, you know, who didn't even have tickets. So literally, it was a riot. Well, when they finally squelched the whole thing and got people out of there, the field was unplayable. And, you know, they had to forfeit the game. Well, it became such a major story at the time that, you know, radio networks were calling up into the press box, and I was the only, you know, schmuck that was there. And I picked up the phone, and all of a sudden I was representing ESPN, or what was RKO back in the day, Westwood One, AP, Mutual, UPI, yada, 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 because it was such a big story. And so I made a lot of contacts out of that. And ultimately, I became like a network stringer or correspondent. Stringer is sort of the derogatory word for correspondent. But I did, and, you know, I started working more and more for ESPN as a network correspondent or stringer. And I was doing that for a long time, but still staying in the telecommunications field like I was doing previous. But then ESPN opened up a station in Chicago. It was the original incantation of WMVP. And they asked me if I wanted to be part of it. And I hesitated initially because local radio is not the most stable thing. It just isn't. And I had a young family at the time. But ultimately, I decided if I don't take the job, ESPN's not going to use me going forward. And that was pretty prestigious to me. So I did take the job. I quit the telecommunications field. I started working local radio full time and continued doing, you know, ESPN on the side and whoring myself out, if you will, to as many people as I could to make extra money. And it was great. I mean, I was working for ESPN, Mark Silverman, myself, Bruce Levine. We were the reporters at the station back in the day. And it was great. And then ultimately, I moved over to The Score, where I was working almost for 20 years before the pandemic pretty much sealed my fate about a year ago now. In the meantime, I've done a lot of other things. I've worked stats for hockey and basketball for the visiting broadcast, gosh, for many, many years, 35, 40 years almost. So I've worked with every broadcaster in the books, every single one of them. And I've known them all fairly well. So it's been a great ride. Like I said, the pandemic pretty much, and the fact that you can't talk to athletes anymore. Everything is Zoom, which is a terrible four-letter word nowadays, at least to me. And so it might have ended my career the way it was in the past, and now I've graduated to doing podcasts. And like I said, if this whole pandemic had happened 5, 10, or 20 years ago, I probably would have been up a creek. But the fact that it happened when it did, and at my age, you know, my kids are older and on their own, I'm okay. So it's been a wonderful ride. I've covered 12 major championships in my hometown, you know, the 6 Bulls championships, 3 Hawks, drank out of the Stanley Cup, covered all those, the first time when they won in Philly and in Boston. And then of course, at home against Tampa Bay. I was in Houston when the White Sox won in 05. I was in Cleveland when the Cubs won in 16 on the field. So again, I've been pretty lucky overall in my career.
What's the greatest championship if you had to rank them?
Well, you know, I always give the same answer to this one. That's like asking which one of your children is your favorite. I've loved every one of them. I mean, you have to understand, I love sports. And I, you know, when I was a kid growing up, Chicago teams choked left and right and they didn't win anything. So when I became an adult and they all started winning, you know, or, you know, believe me, they didn't all win. There was a lot of crappy teams too over all these years. Trust me. And we can talk about that endlessly, but gosh, I mean, I was sick as a dog. I was with Hoffman, George, when they won the White Sox in 05, and I was sick as a dog. I mean, I had 102.5 fever, but I was not going to miss that game four. And so I was on the field, and I do remember, I mean, it was, you know, the field was open. The dome was open that night, and it was a full moon. And I just thought to myself, man, I'm the luckiest ass on the planet, that I'm covering the team. And the White Sox were my team when I was growing up, but each and every one of them has been great. And like I said, I was on the field and talking to all the players, and that was my job. It was dealing firsthand with all the players, and let's face it, they're all giddy after they win something like that. I've had my share of champagne dumped on my head over the years also.
Your favorite player to interview is who?
Oh, gosh. I mean, there's a lot of those. I mean, you're going to ask me the ultimate opposite question, too, and I'll have a good answer for that, too. But, you know, I always had go-to guys, you know, and what I mean by go-to guys who you could talk to even after losses. You know, I mean, everybody is gracious after a win, but you really find out the makeup of somebody after a loss. Steve Kerr was always one of my favorites. He still is. I mean, he's such a good guy, and he's such a, you know, a thought-provoking kind of person. John Paxson, I've been very close friends with all these years, starting as a player, and then ultimately when he, you know, worked in the front office. And you know, we've had some good times together. Kyle Hendricks right now with the Cubs is such a sweetheart of a guy. Who else? I mean, Jose Valentin, you know, you wouldn't think I would come up with that, but Jose Valentin and I were pretty close. We both love boxing. So Jose Valentin and I would talk boxing all the time. You know, there's many, 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 many other guys who are just really good guys overall, but those are ones that just come to mind real quickly.
What about the worst?
Well, I almost got into a fight with Keith Hernandez of the Mets.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't going to get into a fight with him. He was crazed out of his mind, and he was screaming at me, and I didn't do anything. But he might have been coked out of his head. Who knows? I mean, this is before people knew that, you know, he was, you know, the Mets were a team that was, you know, the mid-'80s Mets were a team that dabbled into stuff like that. And I don't think anybody knew it at the time, but he was crazed after a game and took it out on me. And I was just thinking that this guy was like a rabid dog, just, you know, salivating, and he's like hovering over me. And I remember real quickly, I go, wow, he makes $4.8 million. If he hits me, I'm getting at least the .8. But no, I walked away from that one. But I did get an apology, not only from the Mets, but from the National League president, Bill White, at the time, saying that he was out of line. So that was a feather in my hat.
What about other fights? Maybe locally. Did that happen?
Well, that was the worst one. I mean, there's been other a-holes over the years. I mean, Milton Bradley, when he was with the Cubs, was just a creep. you know, who had a chip on his shoulder. I mean, there were players who sometimes they were hungover and they were miserable people. I'm not going to say who in that instance, because I don't want to. I just don't want to say. But there, you know, I'm trying to think who else. I'm going to say also that Michael Jordan to me was always a sweetheart. Always. Michael Jordan to me was a superstar both on and off the court. I mean, he's a flawed human being like everybody else. And people could chip away at him, but listen, I saw him in a totally different light after every game. That man stood up for an hour and a half sometimes, idiotic questions, wave after wave of inane questions. Probably some of mine too, by the way. And he answered them very graciously. And he only got upset with the media that I can recall one time. But short of that, I mean, I just thought the man was a sweetheart. And I'm trying to think of what other guys. Dave Kingman, I'm going way, way, way back. In fact, all the Cubs, my first year was 1979, and that was just a really tough team. And Bill Buckner was not pleasant, unfortunately. God rest his soul. Dave Kingman certainly wasn't pleasant. Barry Foote, Dick Tidrow, who later on became a scout and became a really nice guy to talk to, but he was just part of, I don't know, those late 70 Cubs. And honestly, when I first broke into baseball, and Grobstein and I have talked this endlessly, and George as well, all those managers, or many of those managers, were just creeps. Herman Franks, who was the first Cubs manager I had, I mean, he was a creep and just really would yell at you for no reason. They hated the electronic media. And there's always been like a bias against the electronic media, especially way back when. Whitey Herzog was a creep. Gene Mock was a creep. Frank Lucchesi, another creep. I mean, they were just the really hard-boiled managers back when I first broke in, late 70s, early 80s. Nowadays, the managers are basically like PR conduits to the fans, so they have to be much more polite and much more agreeable with the media. But back then, it just wasn't the case. Don Nelson, another basketball coach, he was not pleasant either.
You think that bias still exists today in media?
Not as much as obviously it once did. I mean, you know, I always equated the rivalry, and maybe it's changed a little bit, but it's still there overall. The rivalry between the electronic and the print media, to me, I remember always watching Westerns when I was growing up, and they had the cattle ranchers and the sheep herders, and the cattle ranchers hated the sheep herders. They looked down their nose at the sheep herders. We're basically doing the same thing. They're just, you know, building up their stock of animals, you know, to make money off them. Well, I mean, the electronic media was trying to do the same thing as the print media, just in a different broadcasting or a different medium. So there was always a rivalry there. And I just think that the old time managers and coaches catered, you know, to the writers because they were there first, if you will. And the electronic media wasn't going to do them as many favors, or might not have been their drinking buddies because we were mostly younger. But then, you know, there were people who came into the broadcast industry, and I'll say it, they were pioneers. Brad Palmer was a pioneer. Red Motlow, the late Red Motlow, who was one of my mentors, and George Offman's as well. I mean, he was a pioneer, and he broke down doors to get the electronic media more access that we didn't have originally. So God bless those people for all that they did for the people who followed them.
How's the new shows going with Les Grobstein and Mark Schanowski?
With Les, it's always a trip because, you know, it's like talking to somebody, you know, in a nursing home, you know, who's dealing with 40 years in the past. I mean, that's, you know, Les's forte is that, you know, he's constantly in the past. And I try and bring him back to the present, because if you're going to do any kind of talk, whether it's a podcast or a show, you got to stay modern as well. Now, God bless Les. He's got this encyclopedia photographic memory that he can remember anything. You know, he remembers what potato chip he ate in 1975, likely. But you have to stay current, and you got to change with the times as well. So it's a trip with Les, but, you know, Les is a good-hearted person, and I've had a lot of experiences with Les over the years. Mark and I are just basketball savants. You know, we could talk basketball until the cows come home, and I love talking basketball with Mark.
And, David, before we finish up today, last question. What's the funniest moment that you've been a part of in your career?
Oh, my God. That one, you caught me off guard with that one. Well, I got to tell you, I don't know if it's the funniest moment, but the funniest times are honestly at Bear games. Sometimes during them, unfortunately, because they play so funny. I hate to say it. So, I mean, the best talk shows are during the games at Bear games because – you know, we just, I don't know whether we're ripping them or whatever, but you asked me about Grobstein. Les and I have had this sort of like running off air, off podcast, you know, back and forth at Bear games, specifically at Soldier Field, where I hate to say it, it's sort of like shooting fish in a barrel, but it is, because I'll, you know, sort of criticize him or, you know, sort of make fun of him. And the comebacks are just minor league. I mean, he's class A and I'm Hall of Fame. At least I think so. So, I mean, I wish I would have recorded some of those, because those are just classic. And I've had a lot of people who've sat up by us in the press box over the years who have just made mention that the experience was off the charts. I'm trying to think of something else. You know, I got a lot of experiences. I don't know which ones are funny or which ones aren't. Again, a lot of great times covering sports. A lot of travel mishaps. I mean, if you travel, you know, over all these years, I mean, I could go endlessly on stories like that, lack of sleep, all that kind of good stuff. But the funniest things, I think, are some of the times that, you know, and the camaraderie. Listen, reporters or broadcast people, we're no different than athletes. You know, we mostly enjoy each other's company, not universally, but mostly. And so, yeah, we've had some good times with each other overall.
Well, David, thank you so much for joining me. Really a pleasure to talk some Bulls and Bears with you. And best wishes, of course, with the two podcasts going. You do great work, and it's been a pleasure to have you on. Thank you.
Anytime, John. Call me anytime.
Great talk there with David Schuster, and that'll do it for us today here on Sports Talk Chicago. Big thank you to David Schuster himself, Matt Dubiel, WCKG, Jim DeTolman, and Tomorrow Entertainment for making this show a success. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John C. Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluo. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Another great show comes your way tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Till then, stay safe, and so long, everyone.
No! No!
Where are the turtles?